Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Shall we play a game? Sorry for the 80s flashback. For word games, puzzles, and trivia of all sorts, right now, check out Ask Me Another. Can you do math at the movies, know the words to 19th century operettas, or name commercial jingles sung in Italian? Find out by listening to Ask Me Another on iTunes under Podcasts. And that's the kicky music that means it is time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. I'm here in the studio today with Stephen Thompson. Stephen, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
Now, the reason why Stephen and I are here together in the studio today and not necessarily in our usual setup is that this is the week that we are working on our live show at 6th and I Synagogue in Washington. Because we're hard at work on that, this week, we're going to bring you a couple of encore segments from holidays past. Now, Stephen, the first one of these encore segments is from the long ago year, 2010.
I don't remember 2010. I've blocked out like large patches of my memory from that particular era. 2010,
right.
No idea what I said.
No idea.
I could have gone back and listened, but you know what?
You're a rebel.
I am a rebel.
Yeah, well, 2010, if you remember, is the year that we actually started this podcast in the summer. And so we had been doing it for roughly 6 months at the time that we did this episode. We sat down, Stephen and I, with Glenn Weldon, who does the show with us every week, also with our pal Trey Graham, who was a regular panelist on this show for several years. And Stephen and Glenn and Trey and I talked about our favorite and then least favorite pieces of holiday pop culture. You'll hear Glenn unleash a legendary piece of Glenniana, if I can put it that way. You'll hear some very fun observations from Trey. Stephen and I will do the best that we can to be interesting.
Yeah, we talked to our producer, Jessica, before we popped into the studio, and she said, I only took out a couple of things. I took out a joke that Stephen made that seemed really dated.
A very dated joke that Stephen made.
Actually, she said, a very dated joke, and then I'm like, it's me. And it was.
Well, we hope that you enjoy this. We hope that you are getting ready for the holiday if you celebrate it. And if you don't, you know, that you can appreciate the, as I said, Glenniana on its own terms. So listen up. This is Christmas of 2010. And you're hearing the music. That means it's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And I am sitting at the table with, as always, the Pop Culture Happy Hour crew. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Linda.
Woohoo! It's an exciting, I would say, happy winter-themed hello from everyone, because we are all so incredibly excited to be here.
An icy blast of good cheer.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it's so incredibly cold.
It is. It's quite cold outside. Now, of course, everyone I know back in Minnesota is currently doing the typical I can't believe you bunch of sissies thing, and they're not wrong.
Didn't they do that already?
They did.
When I lived in Wisconsin, I constantly thought everyone was a great big pansy.
Yes, me too.
Every day is little match girl cold in the Midwest.
Can you two tell us what it sounds like when people from Minnesota and Wisconsin mock us for our cold wussiness?
Oh gosh, I don't know. You know what, you guys, you talk about a cold day here. I've seen Brett Favre take the field. No, gotta get the Brett Favre references
no,
up front.
I don't know. I know that you guys try really hard, but you just don't necessarily have it in you. You know, we have a whole different thing going on out there. We're very hard-nosed.
All right, I can't take it anymore.
We're very hard-nosed about the weather.
Linda lived in Minnesota, and I lived in Wisconsin. And every time I do a Wisconsin accent, it always just goes back to Brett Favre. Mm. Every time Linda does a Minnesota accent, it goes back to just the most cheerful passive aggressiveness imaginable.
Well, that's because when I originally picked up my Minnesota accent, I was working in customer service on the telephone.
Oh, God.
I discovered that a lot of things, they go down a lot easier if you say, oh, I totally understand why you're so frustrated, but there's just not a whole lot I can do for you, I gotta tell you. It's just, unfortunately, I know, but unless you got a copy of the paperwork, you're just going to have to send it in again. We'll do everything we can. I'm real sorry. Anyway, so it is that time of year, the most wonderful time of the year, as they say.
It is.
It is the time when I begin to be fearful once again of Babes in Toyland. And it is the time of year when pop culture, too, turns its flowery attentions to the season at hand, to Christmas, to the end of the year, to the snow, to the man in the red hat. So we thought that we would talk a little bit about our favorite and least favorite holiday pop culture artifacts, items, and so
objects.
Objects. So why don't we start? Can I go around and start with you, Glenn Weldon, and give us a favorite?
Sure. I'm going to start with The Year Without a Santa Claus.
Woohoo!
The Rankin-Bass animated, stop-motion animated masterpiece, more popularly known as The One with Snow Miser and Heat Miser.
That's right.
And I'm just going to make a point here. Snow Miser, people. Not Cold Miser. Not Mr. Cold Miser. Man's name is Snow Miser. It has become a beloved holiday classic, basically on the back of two songs. It's not the story, as I'll touch on in a second. It's these two songs, the song that Snow Miser, played by the veteran character actor Dick Shawn, sings.
I'm Mr. White Christmas. I'm Mr. Snow. I'm Mr. Icicle. I'm Mr. Ten Below. Friends call me Snow Miser. Whatever I touch turns to snow in my clutch. I'm too much.
And the variation of that same song that is sung by Broadway veteran playing a Heat Miser, George S. Irving. And if you think you don't know who George S. Irving is or what he looks like, you do, because the animators have modeled Heat Miser so closely on George S. Irving that it's a little unsettling.
I'm Mr. Green Christmas. I'm Mr. Sun. I'm Mr. Heat Blister. I'm Mr. 101. They call me Heat Miser. Whatever I touch starts to melt in my clutch. I'm too much.
So the two songs you will hear a lot this time of year, because inevitably you're going to be going to some kind of holiday-themed party, and some wag will bust out the song. And they will inevitably screw up the lyrics horribly. And if you are me, this really upsets you. This really fires up your nerd rage. I was at an event not too long ago, and a gentleman started to bust it out. And here's what I do with my feckless nerd rage. I chronicle it. Tucked it into my phone. Mm-hmm. So, Linda, you want to see the title of the memo that I wrote to myself?
There was a memo? I was thinking there was a tweet.
He wrote a memo with the title, Party Doofus.
Party Doofus. Take that guy I'll never see again. Here's what he said. I wrote it down. He says, that one with Mr. Heat Miser and Mr. Cold Miser. And then he started to sing, I'm Mr. Cold Miser, I'm Mr. Ten Below. Now, where to even begin?
Good Lord.
First of all, your scansions all to hell. Your dactyls and your spondies are messing each other up. Trust me, I would get this guy not getting the words right if he were trying to sing the entire song. Mm-hmm. I'll give him a pass. I would get him not getting the words right if it was 1983 and it was only... It was on once a year.
Maybe you saw it that year, maybe you didn't.
Exactly. We live, however, in the age of the internet. This is all over the place, so... just for your records, clip and save for your records. Here it is. I'm Mr. White Christmas. People always get this wrong because people forget that it's a Christmas song. I'm Mr. White Christmas. I'm Mr. Snow. I'm Mr. Icicle. I'm Mr. Ten Below. And then friends call me Snow Miser. Snow Miser. Whatever I touch turns to snow in my clutch. I'm too much. And there's a bridge. I never want to. Exactly. It is a jaunty tune.
Yeah.
Not saying it's not. The bridge is.
I'm just helping.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. I never want to see a day that's over 40 degrees. I'd rather have it 30, 20, 10, 5, and let it freeze. That's the song, people. There's not much to it. And the Heat Miser version is very similar. I'm Mr. Green Christmas. Because, again, remember, Christmas, green. I'm Mr. Green Christmas. I'm Mr. Sun. I'm Mr. Heat Blister. Therefore, we get a little violent imagery into the song, therefore demarcating mm-hmm. their two mm-hmm. personality types. I'm Mr. 101. They call me Heat Miser. What does that tell you?
He has no friends.
He has no friends.
Yep.
That's exactly what it says. They call me Heat Miser.
This is the Zapruder film of songs.
It really offers up a lot if you just spend lots of time with it.
Yeah, I've never seen anybody do a close reading of...
I'll finish. They call me Heat Miser. Whatever I touch starts to melt in my clutch. I'm too much. There it is, people. Now, those are the songs. The plot, very briefly... Santa Claus, played by Mickey Rooney, decides that the children of the Earth do not love him sufficiently, therefore he will stay home. Teaching your children a very valuable lesson about passive aggression, about withholding love as a weapon.
We just won't have Christmas then.
Exactly. Fine. That's the issue with the actual original title. Yeah. Fine then.
Fine.
Or it was Santa's Alcoholic Personality was the original title. Mrs. Claus.
The remake in the early 2000s was called Whatever.
Mrs. Claus, played by Shirley Booth. She doesn't have a first name, Mrs. Claus, because she's a woman. She is Santa's property. She decides that she is going to take Christmas into her own hands and put on the suit, because if Tim Allen has taught us nothing else, he has taught us that the Santa Claus position is really a kind of a Johnny Bravo position. You fit the suit.
Right.
So she decides she's going to put it on. She sings, anyone can be Santa. I've fantasized it a lot.
Oh, I'll bet she did.
I bet she has.
I'll bet she has.
Being a little,
little
peek into, into the Claus's bedroom play.
Oh, no.
The safe word is pfeffernusse. So she decides that she's going to wear the suit and distribute it because she has access, let's remember, to the means of distribution. She has the sled. She has the reindeer. She has the bag. She's got everything she needs. But then she ultimately decides, no, that would be silly. That's really the end of it. There's a song midway through that Santa sings, Mickey Rooney sings, that goes at one point, I believe in Santa Claus like I believe in love. Which...
Wow.
Penalty, sucking, 10 yards. Awful.
See how valuable
Glenn
it is
Weldon
to have...
with the football reference.
See how valuable it is to have football metaphors
I
at your
do
disposal?
One a decade. Oh, that was it. So anyway, that's my favorite one.
What's your favorite one?
It's a favorite one. It has flaws, but man, those tunes are great.
To everyone who doubts that I also love this, I have on my desk Heat Miser and Snow Miser bobbleheads.
And how many people have come up to you and said, hey, Cold Miser?
I thought it was Cold Miser.
Fortunately, they are labeled Heat Miser and Snow Miser, so I get a little bit less. What I do get a surprisingly amount of is, who are those guys? And I always want to say, oh, you poor...
These kids today.
You poor
interns.
Thing. Interns. Right. All right, how about you, Trey Graham? What's your favorite?
Well, my favorite holiday thing is also a tune. There's no, you know, a whole, you know, diatribe attached to it, but
you can work on it.
Okay. And it's one of the very few times where you're going to hear me say that I like a studio recording of a particular thing better than the original cast album recording or the movie musical track. This, as Linda Holmes, I think, has guessed already, is the studio version of Dolly Parton singing Hard Candy Christmas from Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. And I'm just really, really fond of that song.
Maybe I'll sleep real late. Maybe I'll lose some weight. Maybe I'll clear my junk. Maybe I'll just get drunk on apple wine. Me, I'll be just fine.
And what can you tell us about this song?
If I remember correctly, they are singing it because the whole house has been shut down.
Oh, I see.
And they are all, you know, busting up and moving on to other things.
Oh,
it
I
looks
see.
Like that's going to happen, right?
I see.
And I believe it is a song of comfort sung by the Madam Miss Mona.
Right.
To her girls.
For Christmas.
Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. That's one.
That's your,
that
your
is my
heartwarming
favorite.
Holiday memory.
You have to hear Dolly Parton sing this song.
It's from Ho House.
Yeah.
All right. My holiday memory is... my family growing up tried to create as many sort of ritualized warm Christmas memories as possible, and these ranged from every Christmas morning each child would receive a bed present. This is if you have an habitually sort of scheming child who wants to get up to open Christmas presents at 3:30 in the morning, you leave a bed present so that the kid wakes up and has a present in bed and then is not compelled to go downstairs and ruin everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, everything from that to a certain kind of sort of holiday punch that my dad would prepare involving sherbet and whatnot. But where pop culture is most woven into these rituals is that every Christmas morning, my sister Valerie and I would wake up and crawl into my parents' bed. My father would have mysteriously been in another location doing doing God knows what, presumably helping Santa Claus prepare, prepare the holiday trimmings.
Right.
But we would, my sister and I would get on either side of our mother, and my mother would read us comic books. The comic books in particular that were always a part of our lives were by Carl Barks, who was the man behind the Donald Duck and Uncle Scrooge and Walt Disney comics and stories, and comic books by Walt Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them were absolutely treasured figures and remain incredibly treasured figures in all the respective Thompson households. And I actually emailed my mom this afternoon asking her for the names of some of these comics so that if people wanted to track them down. The Walt Kelly stuff is mostly in the public domain and can be sought out through various reprints. The Carl Barks stuff is still in reprint.
Yeah. So it's Disney. They're not going to let that go.
It's Disney. Disney, for some reason, did not let all that stuff go into the public domain. I wonder how. But, of course, sending an email to my mother saying, hey, what were the names of those comic books, led me to receive about 11 emails during the course of the day. But what she particularly recommends, and I have here a list. Oh, my God, this is so long. I didn't even look at this until just now.
It's like 3 pages.
It is. So many things. A Christmas for Shacktown, which is a heartwarming Donald Duck favorite. The Golden Christmas Tree, which is another Donald Duck favorite. And the Walt Kelly Christmas with Mother Goose, which is just full of incredibly sweet and heartwarming holiday favorites.
Very nice.
It's a wonder that I grew up to become the miserable, twisted wreck that I am.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, I am going to take the opportunity to stick up for something treated as a holiday classic, but often I feel misunderstood. This is the time of year when they show It's a Wonderful Life. Despite the fact that it is not actually much of a Christmas movie, and it is actually only tangentially related to Christmas. And what the point I want to make about this movie is, despite its reputation for being treacly in the area of Christmas, it is actually, for me, a fairly dark and compelling story that is not wrapped up in its gimmick about seeing the world without you. But for most of it, is a very sad story about the fact that people who make a lot of sacrifices, even if they seem saintly and angelic, are often actually very angry about the sacrifices that are required of them for the sake of other people, and that sacrificing to help others does not always mean that you do so cheerfully or that you do not suffer over those choices and having to make those choices. I think one of the smartest things that they do in explaining all of this about George Bailey and explaining this about his life is to very carefully set up that he has this very lovely romance with Donna Reed, who plays the woman who becomes his wife. And my favorite scene in the movie has nothing to do with Christmas and nothing to do with treacle, but it has to do with their initial flirtations and romance, and takes place when they're coming home from the dance after they fall in the pool. And so she's wearing a robe. And she does indeed, in an incredibly unlikely string of events, the robe gets stepped on, and she loses the robe and winds up hiding in the bush, and this little scene ensues.
Wait a minute. What am I doing? This is a very interesting situation.
Please give me my robe.
Man doesn't get in a situation like this every day.
I'd like to have my robe.
Not in Bedford Falls, anyway.
Ouch! Oh!
Gesundheit.
George,
it requires a little thought here.
Give me my robe.
I've read about things like this, but I never...
Shame on you. I'm going to tell your mother on you.
Well, my mother's way up in the corner there.
I'll call the police.
And they're way downtown. They'd be on my side, too.
Then I'm going to scream.
Maybe I could sell tickets. No.
What I love about that scene, first of all, his line reading of "this is a very interesting situation" is one of my favorite line readings in the history of movies. It is so funny. And Jimmy Stewart in this movie is so funny in so many places, and it's part of the movie that's really lost, I think.
Yeah.
Is that scene is really, really funny. And when he has that moment when he starts to tease her, when he starts to say those little things about the police would be on my side, absolutely love that scene. And I think that's what makes the scenes later when he wants to give her things and he can't because, there are sacrifices to make for the town and the family. That's what makes them work, and that's what makes them powerful. And even though everybody only thinks about the angel and the nightgown and the see what the world would be like if you had never lived, a lot of the movie is really this guy's sad story of having to make decisions that are often difficult, and that not everybody who, you know, making a warm decision to help others does not always come without actual sadness and actual frustration. And sometimes he's a guy who gets very angry, and I like that about that movie.
No, I don't care for it.
Well, that's fine. I many people don't care.
No, I love that movie. I'm fun and with it.
Yeah, the people who don't care for it are the ones who have never actually seen it. They're right. Kind of reacting to the last 15 minutes of it. That's what they're
right.
reacting to.
I think that's right.
Well, and as we've discussed on this show, there's a certain elitism that comes with anytime something is sort of universally regarded as something that everyone loves, then naturally it must be terrible.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
But that is a fantastic movie.
And it contains lots of joy, and I do enjoy the
and
joy.
And in spite of that, I still really, really love
exactly.
it.
Exactly. I like joy during the holiday season. Okay, Glenn Weldon, what is your least favorite?
This is going to be quick. It's the 2006 live-action version of The Year Without a Santa Claus, which starred Michael McKean as Snow Miser and Harvey Firestein as Heat Miser. How could that go wrong?
Wow.
It went wrong by just losing all the charm and whimsy and just really hitting the pathos, sappy, sentimental stuff really, really hard. ABC Family, thank you very much. Going all out with the thing they did. So it was...
I forgot all about that.
You know, he has fire in his name. What more? Well, it's right there.
Well, he does say, I'm too much.
He does say that.
It's also fitting.
He's not wrong.
It is one is tempted to make jokes about flaming.
Exactly. So it is an abomination, and let us not speak of it again.
Excellent. How about you, Trey Graham? What's your favorite abomination?
RuPaul's cover of Hard Candy Christmas.
There you go. Look how we're...
Every holiday season, it comes back to torment me.
Yep.
I can't get away from RuPaul's cover.
I go to Target and RuPaul's...
There it is.
All right.
I kind of want to live in a world where Candy Christmas is playing in every Target.
Don't you feel like on balance it would make the world a better place if that happened?
Don't be jealous of his boogie.
I'm eternally jealous of his boogie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how about you, Thompson? What's your least favorite for Christmas?
Why should we?
Is there a comic book that you really hate?
Yeah, why should we dwell?
Yeah, I'm about to tell you why I actually hate Jimmy Stewart.
Why should we dwell on the negative this holiday season? I mean, everybody knows there are endlessly crass commercial concerns, and there are terrible holiday specials, and there are clearly just the very existence of a Jim Carrey live-action version of How the Grinch Stole Christmas is mm-hmm. just unbelievably appalling. And to be honest, in the interest of full disclosure, I have never actually seen the live-action version of How the Grinch Stole Christmas, but I've seen enough.
It certainly seems like a bad idea.
Absolutely yeah. insufferable commercials wherein he's wisecracking,
mm-hmm.
which is just so, so terribly wrong. I mean, I really start trotting out How the Grinch Stole Christmas on DVD long about October 15th. So my love of
you
that.
You are now my least favorite thing about the holiday season because that is wrong.
On the other hand, I would like to point out Christine Baranski as the decorating obsessed neighbor lady, right? I think in the in the live action version.
It's been a long time.
Idea.
Neighbor lady. What? Yep.
There is no neighbor lady. That's no wrong. I thought you were going to say she played the dog.
I was going to say unless a branch was tied to her forehead,
right.
Then I disapprove.
Well, that's the thing about the cartoon. You know, the thing I respond to most strongly is Max,
Max
really a function of Chuck Jones' talents, and he's not really, I mean, he's in the book, he's sort of a Dr. Seuss creation, but all that Max stuff is pure mm-hmm. Chuck Jones.
I will admit, although you said the thing about October, and I quite rightly condemned you for that, I did read The Grinch this fall.
Oh, really? Interesting.
To a couple of my friends' kids, because that was what they wanted to hear.
So you did, huh?
Well, it wasn't my choice.
Interestingly, what do I have in my house?
What do you have in your house?
Kids.
You have kids, that's true.
Uh-huh.
All right, I give up. Here's my least favorite thing about the holiday, and there's a little bit of a story here. I have a sister who is very entertaining, who I enjoy very much. And
I like where this is going already.
And we have frequently spent a lot of time just sitting around watching TV during the holiday season. And long about 1990, after Home Alone had come out, there was, when they were putting Home Alone on TV, there was a commercial for the TV showings of Home Alone.
Oof.
that we kept seeing on TV.
Dashing for the plane, trying to make the flight.
Come on!
Mom and Dad just made
Kevin!
A tiny oversight.
Ah!
As they hurry home, two robbers plan a heist. But little do they know, he's got his home turf iced. Home alone, home alone, to trick them every way. Oh, what fun it is to see two burglars get far away.
For those of you not following on the video podcast, Linda Holmes is silently singing along and waving her hands in the
chair
air.
Dancing.
Okay. So actually, now that I think of it, I think those were actually ads for the movie, now that I think about it. I don't think
really?
It was TV songs. I think it was for the movie. Huh. So the great thing about this is that my sister and I immediately fastened on both the horrible Home Alone, Home Alone refrain, as well as the line, oh, what fun it is to see two burglars get flambéed. Mm. And we, for years at Christmas time, you could just say, Home Alone, Home Alone. And so in the broader sense,
yes,
my least favorite thing about the holiday is that you do get these endless parodies of carols with various different words attached to them. Mm-hmm. I think you will find, if you search your memory, that some of these are earwormed into your brain as well. I mean, I just feel that various companies and commercial concerns and other things put together their little parody carols with their own words, and I think that that has to end in favor of better Christmas commercials such as... Now, that is the best one. As you probably know, that is the handbell Hershey Kisses. And that is the classic, to me, Christmas commercial, maybe with the exception of the kid running downstairs when the brother comes home in the Folgers commercial and she runs downstairs in her pajamas and says, Peter! And then because Peter's home. And it's between those two. But definitely, if everybody would go with the Hershey Kisses handbell instrumental as opposed to writing your own words, such as Home Alone, Home Alone, we would all be
keep
much
doing
better.
This,
so less is more. I think we can agree that the principle that works for that is less is more. None is better.
We would
less
both,
is
we
none
would
is
all
better,
be better
than less.
So that's what I do not like.
Good times.
Yeah, good times.
What a ride.
What a ride.
Trip down memory lane.
Trip down memory lane.
I mean, I'm assuming it was. I wasn't listening.
I was. It was quite a trip down quite a memory lane. What we didn't talk about enough, I think, in that segment, maybe a little, but not really enough, was something that I have heard that you are into. I have heard you like music.
I do. I have at least a passing interest in it as part of, at least as part of my job. At
right.
least, you know, I have to feign interest
at
in
At least
music.
As a vocation.
Right.
So our other encore today is a segment that we did the following year in 2011 about some of the holiday music that we listen to and enjoy. And we have a wonderful moment from Trey in which he actually got on the phone.
I remember this.
And got some actual intel for us. I love that. And a little more Glenniana for those of you who like that kind of thing. And we should also mention, if you get into this and you think, I'm pretty sure they talked about holiday music one other time, you can find in our archives just last year in 2013 a conversation that we had with our pal Chris Klimek about holiday music. And that's also really fun. But we figured that since we were asking you to step back in time with us, that we would make it the longest step possible.
Right.
All the way back to 2011. So enjoy a little talk about holiday tunes. Stephen, I know that you have some fondness for holiday music.
I do. Conceptually, we're not just merely talking about holiday music. We're actually going to throw down some serious recommendations here, correct?
Right. Correct.
Okay. So we were looking for sort of definitive versions of holiday classics. And what I realized was that two of my absolute all-time favorite holiday songs are the same song. You know, they're the same song covered by different artists.
Sure.
I have sort of my staples of holiday music, and what I've found is that the sort of overall defining characteristic of the songs is a note of melancholy.
Sure.
Because the holiday season, you know, for many people, not particularly for me, but for many people, is sort of a you know, somewhat brooding, intensive time. What I find is that the end of the year is an inherently melancholy time, because regardless of how you assess your year, if it was a good year, it's over.
If it was a bad year, it was a bad year. And if nothing happened, nothing happened.
Yeah.
So the end of the year is sort of, whether you attach Christmas to it or not.
You bring me down.
I know.
Well, that would technically be the first 6 days or 7 days of Christmastide.
Whatever. yes, I'm sorry. The first 6 or 7 days of Christmastide are an inherently melancholy time. And so a lot of my favorite Christmas songs and holiday songs are inherently melancholy. You're Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, Joy to the World, or, you know, Silver Bells. You know, a lot of the kind of Silent Night, you know, a lot of the sort of more hymn-like songs tend to attract me more than your Frosty the Snowman, your Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, your So the sort of peppier and more secular they are, the less they tend to interest me. But both of the songs that count among my favorites of all time are covers of Little Drummer Boy.
Yep. I knew where that was going.
Which, one, I'm sure you know one direction I'm going with this, which is your Bing Crosby and David Bowie.
Sure.
Which is probably my favorite moment of Christmas culture in the history of the world.
Yeah, it's super fantastic.
And I was thinking somebody, some enterprising genius, needs to recreate that scene with David Bowie as the elder and some young whippersnapper, maybe a Russell Brand as the young whippersnapper. Mike, could you play a little Peace on Earth / Little Drummer Boy for me?
Actually, our family do most of the things that other families do. We sing the same songs.
Do you?
I even have a go at White Christmas.
You do, huh?
And this one. This is my son's favorite. Do you know this one?
Oh, I do indeed. It's a lovely thing.
They told me, ba-rum-pa-pum-pum, a newborn king to see, ba-rum-pa-pum-pum. Our finest gifts we bring, ba-rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum-pum. Peace on earth, can it be? Years from now, perhaps we'll see.
I could just listen to Bing Crosby talk like that all day. Oh, I think it's marvelous.
Yeah, I have to say, you know, the banter is surprisingly laid back and charming.
It just immediately kind of slows the blood. There's sort of minor key notes behind it that's just immediately transporting.
And who's your other one?
The other one is also of Little Drummer Boy. This is probably my favorite holiday album that does not include Chipmunks by the band Low.
Those are your two Little Drummer Boys.
Yeah, just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful versions of a song that I don't necessarily immediately think of as that's my holiday song.
A song that, quite frankly, can be insufferable in the wrong hands.
Yes, it can.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
But not in those hands.
When you said which song it was, I was like, yee.
Yeah.
My favorite Christmas song is Wonderful Christmas.
You know, it will come as no surprise to any of you, I don't think, that I am totally with Stephen on this idea that minor key, vaguely melancholy Christmas songs are the best kind of Christmas songs.
Not a surprise.
In the Bleak Midwinter is a big favorite of mine. There is another text called, and a lot of people don't think of it as a Christmas song, it's Let All Mortal Flesh Keep Silence, which is a really, really old liturgical text, and it is most often set to a French tune called Picardy. Again, a minor key melody, although one of the things I like about it, and this one I brought as kind of a guilty pleasure, because some arrangements bloom out into a kind of major key sunburst for the climax at the end. Either way it's arranged, it's got tremendous authority. It's kind of a shock and awe hymn. Not so much melancholy as tremble and despair ye in the presence of God, ye people. You know, there's these lyrics about cherubim with sleepless eye flanking the coming God who's coming down to earth our full homage to demand. Technically, it's an incarnation hymn. It's from a text that was about about transforming the blood into wine. The guilty pleasure setting I brought is this really, really grandiose choral setting by Gustav Holst, the guy who wrote The Planets. And it's often sung during Advent in the run-up to Christmas to help congregations get in the God is coming frame of mind. And it ends up with the choir kind of thundering along and in at least 8 parts, and there's a big double amen tacked onto the end. So as kind of a Christmas guilty pleasure, I spent about 5 minutes looking on YouTube to find the glitteriest recording I could find, and this is it. That's one of the less refined versions of Let All Mortal Flesh Keep Silence. So, and my third choice is not at all minor key. There's a kind of a personal connection. I'm not going to tell you what it is because you'll recognize it, I think. I like it because, A, everyone likes it, and because my mama went to school with the person who made the song famous in around the 3rd and 4th grade, I think it was. It's been famous for a long, long time, but when I was digging around to find out more about it, I discovered that it was not an instant hit. It
originally came out in 1958 and absolutely did zip. The next year, I had a pretty good-sized record with Sweet Nothings, and they re-released Rockin' Again, and it did pretty good. And then the next year, 1960, I had I'm Sorry, and they released Rockin' Again, and it did great.
Got a musical hint for you.
That's Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree.
Well done, Glenn Weldon. Wow. That song, if I am not incorrect, that song has been the number one Christmas song more years than not since 1960, and due in part to little passages like this. So that's Brenda Lee, of course, and the voice you heard earlier was Brenda Lee, who I talked to earlier today from her home in Nashville.
Oh, cool.
And you know, we talked a little bit about what she likes about it, and the great thing about that conversation was that she talked about the band members. She didn't talk about herself. She talked about how great the saxophonist was, and how great the guitar player was, and how great the drummer was. She says she never gets tired of hearing the song, which is kind of amazing to me. In fact, she apparently still sings it at the end of her shows, no matter what season it is. it's like always the encore, right? Like June, which I think is kind of cute. I asked her to settle one question that has always troubled me, which is that I said, Miss Lee, if you and your family were rocking around your Christmas tree, what is the correct direction?
What is the correct direction?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, my gosh. South, of course.
South. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Brenda Lee.
Very, very nice.
That is my new ringtone.
I approve. Thank you very much, Trey Graham.
You're welcome.
Glenn Weldon, Holiday Music.
Okay, here's mine.
They got cars big as bars, they got rivers of gold, but the wind goes right through you, it's no place for the old. When you first took my hand on a cold Christmas Eve, you promised me Broadway was waiting for me. You were handsome.
You were pretty queen of New York City.
When the band finished playing, they held up for more. Sinatra was swinging, all the tunes they were singing. We kissed on the corner, then danced through the night.
Christmas Day.
All right, so that is Fairy Tale of New York by the late Kirsty MacColl and the remarkably still not late Shane McGowan of the Pogues, who is still kicking.
Shane McGowan, still alive.
Still alive. His liver.
Think of all the people who died too young, and then think about the fact that Shane McGowan.
I hesitated to pick this, even though I love it very much, because it is kind of the default hipster Christmas pick.
Yeah.
But and it's been covered by everybody from Coldplay to Third Eye Blind to Katie Tunstall. There's also fans of the Venture Brothers should seek out online the version by The Monarch and Dr. Girlfriend. That's a lot of fun. It does contain, famously, a gay slur, but in my opinion, if you preface this particular gay slur with the phrase, "You scumbag, you maggot, you cheap lousy," I think you get a pass. especially if you are Kirsty MacColl in 1987.
I gotcha.
And you are.
There is another version of this song, and there's many versions of the song, but lately when I've been kind of talking up this as a particularly great Christmas song, people in the last couple of years are pushing back with, well, you know, there's a version by Florence Welch and Billy Bragg that's really good too. Florence Welch, of course, from Florence and the Machine. I'm a big fan of both those performers, but listen to this.
They got cars, big as bars, they've got rivers of gold, but the wind whips right through you, it's no place for the old. When you first took my hand on a cold Christmas Eve, you promised me Broadway was waiting for me. You are handsome.
You were pretty queen of New York City. When the band finished playing, they yelled out for more. Sinatra was swinging, they were singing.
We kissed on the corner, then danced through the night.
And the boys of the NYPD choir were singing Galway Bay. And the bells were ringing out for Christmas Day.
Okay, so this is incredibly lugubrious, and I understand what they're going for. They want to play up the plaintive sadness of the song, but the song is already sad. The song is already melancholic. You are gilding the junky alcoholic lily of this particular song in a completely unnecessary way, so I'm still sticking with Kirsty MacColl and the Pogues. Fairy Tale of New York is the best Christmas song ever.
Excellent choice. Excellent choice. I brought my favorite Christmas song, which has been my favorite Christmas song since I listened to choral versions of it and other things when I was a kid. It's always been my favorite. It was my favorite to sing. Let's hear my pick, which is by Sufjan Stevens.
Jesus, our brother, strong and good, was humbly born in a stable. Friendly beasts around him stood. Jesus, our brother, strong and good. I set the donkey, shaggy and brown. I carried his mother uphill and down. I carried his mother to Bethlehem town. I said the donkey, shaggy and brown.
That is The Friendly Beasts, which, like The Little Drummer Boy, is sort of from the manger scene. It's sort of a song about the manger scene. And in this one, the animals who are in the sort of barn do various things to be helpful during the birth and with the baby. And the doves sing, and the other animals give up blankets and things like that. So for some reason, it's always been to me the most resonant Christmas song. And so that has always been my favorite. And I discovered this version on Sufjan Stevens' holiday album, Hark, Songs for Christmas, which I definitely recommend. There's a ton of really beautiful stuff on it, but I recommend that one in particular. It's a very special favorite of mine. And
it also has Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing, which you guys played.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. So that's definitely my absolute favorite. I've heard many, many versions of it, but none that I like better than that. So that was my choice.
Anytime you can just bundle up like a big wad of sentiment,
yeah,
and ask me to embrace it, I'm probably going
to
do that.
That's what we like to do. That's what we like to do. So for those of you who are going to see at the live show, we'll be very, very happy and excited to see you. And for those of you who won't be with us there, we will be bringing you the live show next week. You can follow me. You can follow Stephen on Twitter. You can follow me at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N. Our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy. That's R-E-E-D-Y. And of course, as always, our producer, Meredith, and music director, Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our In and Out music, which you are tapping your foot to right now. Thank you, Stephen, for taking this trip down memory lane with me.
Thank you, Linda. And a happy holidays to you.
And a happy holidays to you. And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you back here next week. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Shall we play a game? Sorry for the 80s flashback. For word games, puzzles, and trivia of all sorts, right now, check out Ask Me Another. Can you do math at the movies, know the words to 19th century operettas, or name commercial jingles sung in Italian? Find out by listening to Ask Me Another on iTunes under Podcasts.